Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Boiled Leather Audio Hour. My name is Sean T. Collins. I cover Game of Thrones for Rolling Stone. I am the creator and humble host of BoiledLeather.com, a.k.a. All Leather Must Be Boiled, a Song of Ice and Fire Game of Thrones blog, where you probably found this podcast. And I am the co-author of the official annotated Game of Thrones with Elio Garcinia Jr. from Westeros.org, and series editor Anne Grohl. And joining me today, as always, is my illustrious co-host.
Stefan Sasse, a very illustrious co-host. Mm-hmm. I am a contributor of essays to the Tower of the Hand. I have my own blog for all things nerd at thenerdstreamera.blogspot.com. And we are discussing a new topic today at a very rapid pace, considering our last podcast frequency. So what are we talking about today, Sean?
We're talking about yet another new Winds of Winter sample chapter, and no, you have not accidentally downloaded the same episode twice. Within something like, was it 7 days, 9 days? In a very, very short period of time, Martin released two sample chapters from The Winds of Winter. The last one that we talked about in our last episode was a Tyrion chapter. And this week, that's funny. Talking about, like, it would be funny if there was like a sample a week. He was serializing it like Dickens. This week it's somebody named Mercy, which caused a little confusion and speculation in the fandom when Martin first leaked that that's what the chapter was going to be called. Although, in retrospect, we should have guessed it right away, because there's only so many characters whose names change. And yeah, there's definitely only so many characters whose names change to proper names instead of, like, descriptors, you know, like the merchant's man or whatever. So Mercy is obviously intended to be a name, so it's narrowed it down pretty quickly, if I had given it any thought, which I didn't, sad to say.
It sounds stupid now, but I did. I thought it was Arya from the start, but sadly I didn't write it down anywhere, so it's easy to say that now.
I believe you, Stefan.
Oh, that's so gracious.
So, you know, to be honest with you, when this chapter went up, I was off my computer for a while, and I opened it back up, and across multiple platforms, Tumblr, Twitter, email, I was bombarded by people saying, "Oh my god, have you read the new chapter?" And here's my hot take on it. I did, and, you know, I wasn't crazy about it, to be perfectly honest. I don't know how much of that was inflated expectations. People telling me it's the most, you know, that it was amazing or thrilling or exciting or whatever. And, you know, perhaps I'm being unfair, because perhaps the chapter is not, in fact, intended to be amazing and thrilling and exciting. I think there's some room for debate there. But I didn't think it was the best thing since sliced bread. I'll put it that way. You know, I didn't. What did you think?
I think what you are describing is absolutely correct. The best comparison I can think of is the fourth episode of the third season of Game of Thrones, because many people were saying, "Oh my god, this is just such a great episode." It was the episode in which Daenerys said Dracarys, and of course it was a cool moment and everything, but I'm not sure about whether this makes the episode as such a big deal. And the same thing is with this chapter. Arya finally avenges Lommy. She kills Rhaef the Sweetling. You know, it's very badass and everything, and you are led around by the nose for a large part of the chapter. I mean, this rape thing we are going to talk about for sure is basically just a bait and switch and stuff like that. You know, it is just easily consumable. It's exciting. It ends on a satisfying note for many readers. And I guess this is why so many people enjoyed it so much compared to the other sample chapters so far, with brooding Tyrion and stuff like that. You know, you just have Arya killing a guy who had it coming. So
right.
I guess that is the reason for the excitement and the enthusiasm over it. I don't share it necessarily. I didn't think that it was falling flat either. After I read it, I immediately sent one of those emails you just mentioned, and I just said, "Holy shit!" But it was not holy shit in the way of "Holy shit, this is so cool," but in "What the fuck just happened?" I was very much thinking all the time, oh my god, this is so gross. I mean, we have Arya here all the time talking about an imminent rape and being killed afterwards, and I wasn't sure for a pretty long time whether or not this would be a real thing, because she's in faceless men training, so I guess it's possible to be raped and killed and somehow get away with it, you know what I mean? So I was preparing for a controversial scene, to say the least, but then it turned luckily turned out to be just a bait and switch, and then we have this sexual seduction with Raftus Wheatling, which was just so
sexual.
You know what I mean, and for this I think it was a very engaging chapter, but not one I would say I enjoy.
See, for me, I agree with everything you're saying. Excuse me, obviously. Yeah, it was more shocking and upsetting and disturbing and even repulsive than it was exciting, thrilling, amazing, holy shit, how cool. You know, and I guess maybe right here we can put to bed the idea that Arya continuing to check off people from her list, by, in this case, sex murdering them, is not really something that we probably should be excited about anymore. That seems obvious to me. I don't think that's necessarily the case with a lot of the audience, and I hate putting myself up against the potential straw man of an audience that's not as smart as me. That's a lame critical tactic, but I don't find it cathartic, I don't find it thrilling, I don't find it badass, I just find it sad and horrible. And now, to be fair, I think Martin is playing with that, and, you know, he set up Arya as being this cool badass tomboy, and this list thing is very, very Inigo Montoya, which is a big touchstone for him in general. So, you know, he's willfully dancing right across that fine line until it doesn't exist anymore. And that, I think, is true in a lot of ways of this chapter, which is sort of my problem, ultimately. You know, like, take, for example, the rape element of it, which, as you say, winds up being sort of a bait and switch. Arya, as Mercy wakes up and says, oh, you know, tonight's the night I'll be raped. And my thought was, she's been assigned by the Faceless Men to kill a child molester. And so this is, you know, on this day, she'll have her appointment with this person to get in close quarters with him and then kill him. And it winds up, no, that's not the case, and she's not actually in danger of being raped except by Raft the Sweetling. And at that point, you know, you and I, the readers, know that she's actually playing him. He's not playing her. But, you know, it turns out to be this play. And I'm not really sure what the value of that is, that particular bait and switch. It almost seems a little trollish to me, you know? Like, Martin just kind of, here's a way to threaten rape against everybody's favorite, you know, the fan favorite female character in the, you know, who's also the youngest major female character. And it doesn't really amount to anything beyond kind of a gag, I guess, you know? Gag's not quite the right word, but it's not, it's, I don't know that we gained anything. I don't know that we, it just seems more like a trick than something that actually reveals anything about the world, about the ideas at work in the story. You know what I mean?
I guess it's a little bit like the Tyrion chapter in A Clash of Kings, where he counts up to three. You know what I mean?
Yes.
That was also a very neat trick that Martin pulled. You enjoy it while reading, but it is a trick after all.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue, I guess, that it has two narrative functions here. The one thing is that we can see into this darker and really twisted mind that Arya has now, her identification with this Mercy character and her very joyful and playful way of of taking on these matters, you know, it shows to you just how fucked up this world really is. On the one hand, and on the other hand, it serves to show us what an image Tyrion has even in Braavos. But I agree with you, basically, that even with these arguments, it's a bit, a bit of a trick. I don't terribly mind about it being in there, but I see where you're coming from.
I mean, the Tyrion's trick with the where he counts to three and he, you know, which the show I think handled really beautifully. That at least advances the plot and shows you that he's legitimately smarter and smarter than these other, he's outsmarted these other people. This doesn't really do anything like that. It's just like, oh, she's gonna get raped. Oh wait, no, she's not. It's make believe. And then after that, it's like, well, okay. Now that's not to say that the idea of the play within the I wanted to say play within a play, but that's not what it is. But that just shows you how strongly it makes me think of Shakespeare, who did that sort of thing. You know, which are this whole chapter is sort of one giant riff on Shakespeare in its way. I think that has value. I think that's interesting. I think it works as aesthetically. It's fun. It's fun to read. It's cool. This whole, when you realize that Arya is helping to put on a play that's a fictionalization of events that actually took place to her and her family and her friends and her enemies in King's Landing, that's really cool. It's a neat, that's a neat trick for Martin to play. I'll put it that way. And I am on the record as being a big fan of the storylines this late in the series that are tangential and just sort of exist to flesh out the world and provide the sort of reflection of the main action. You know, to me, I look at this in the same way I look at Quentin Martell, in the same way I look at the giant turtle in the river.
You know,
it adds character to this world. And that's fun to me. But the specific handling of sexual violence, I wound up finding a little bit troubling. Because I'm not sure.
It was definitely a bit for shock value, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe we're overreacting. I'm not quite sure yet.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps we can give a better view of that when the final book is out and we're not just having this one sample chapter. You know what I mean?
For sure, yeah, and that's the...
When the pressure on the individual chapter to get analyzed by us in the whole podcast isn't just as excruciating, but I definitely see your point. I'm just not sure whether or not this will be a big issue or not.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have a lot of faith in Martin, more than most, almost want to say. The occasional misstep is fine. You know, this thing's taken out of context. I mean, it's funny. We're recording this on a day where there's this cancel Colbert movement on Twitter in response to a segment he did where he was making fun of a football team, American football team here in the States with a name that's racist against... It's a, you know, it's an epithet for Native Americans. So
the Red Sox,
The Redskins. So he made a joke about like how he's going to start like a Asian American association, you know, with a very offensive name too, to point out that the football team's name is ridiculous, and that this charity that the owner of the football team was establishing with the racist name of the football team in the charity was also ridiculous. Someone on the corporate Twitter account just pulled that joke out of the segment and slapped it on Twitter as a standalone thing, and Asian American activists and a lot of activists got very upset at how blunt and, you know, it just doesn't work removed from the segment. I mean, I don't think he should lose his job for it. He didn't even tweet it. I think the segment works. There's a lot. My point is context ultimately matters a great deal. And when you're taking a chapter like this that's dealing with sex, that's dealing with rape, that's dealing with child abuse, and just stand it on its own, it can seem perhaps more shock for shock's sake than it actually might be within the larger novel. And I'd imagine that the readers who've been saying, guys, I can't with these entire episodes about individual chapters. It's just too much. This is going to provide plenty of ammo for them. You know, that it's just too, you know, that maybe this material doesn't bear this level of scrutiny, but I don't know. I mean,
we'll see.
The whole reason I said it left me flat is because it felt edgy and a little bit in a way that was trying maybe a little bit too hard.
But, yeah. I want to get in here with this thing I did. I just read all the comments in the Tower of the Hands discussion about the sample chapter, and I singled out four that I think are worth talking about a little bit.
Okay.
And the first one of them just fits in here because it was made by First in Battle, and he said, "Funny that we're grossed out by sexy Arya, but murderous Arya we're fine with."
Yeah.
And I think that that carries a lot of water. You know, we both have argued in the past that this whole revenge and murder thing is nothing to be admired, but it is rather something we should be disturbed by.
Yes.
And he nails it here in this one Twitter compatible sentence. And this sexy thing, why is it so much more disturbing than her? Why is it more disturbing for her to tongue kiss Rev the Sweetling, but not so much slicing him open with a needle?
Right, than to slit his femoral artery and let him bleed out. Yeah, no, I agree. The point is, you know, I think there's two ways to take that sentence. Funny that we're grossed out by sexy Arya, but murderous Arya we're fine with. I think the thing to do here is not to suddenly become less grossed out by quote-unquote sexy Arya, which is really deeply unfortunate that this child has been forced into a world where she's relentlessly sexualized by grown men and is so much so that she's actually kind of comfortable with it at this point. That's very sad. And again, this is an actual child. Arya's 11, right?
This
is not something about, you know, her sort of nascent pubescent or adolescent sexuality, which I think is a perfectly valid topic for fiction, particularly because in contemporary society, there's so few acceptable ways for us as adults to access those feelings that we had back then, which are still very much a part of us, but because of, I think, necessary societal prohibitions against sexualizing the very young as a grown-up. These are difficult, sticky, tricky issues, and I think they deserve some talking about. That's not what's happening in this chapter. Arya is a little girl. And that's fucked up. That's fine. The point is to also remember, yes, Arya's a little girl, and it's terrible for a little girl to murder people. Like, that's forcing her to grow up too fast, at least as much as Raph the Sweetling, like, pinching her nipple, you know? She shouldn't have to go around murdering people. That's a terrible, terrible tragedy. And that's a terribly abusive lifestyle for her to be living. Just because she's sort of chosen it at this point, I think we as readers can still step back and be like, God, that's awful. You know?
Yeah, I think it has a large amount to do with that violence and especially killing people is in works of fiction more or less detached from what it means in reality.
Yes.
In many lesser shows and many lesser novels, killing people is just one method of problem solving, is just providing a character arc. You know, killing the arch nemesis is just... it's just business as usual in most stories. James Bond, for example, he always kills the baddie at the end. Normally he's thrown off some cliff or something.
Yeah.
But it is just a ritual as well as claiming the womanly prize afterwards.
Yes.
And I have written an article on Earthstream about it in respect to the show Sons of Anarchy, which is guilty of the same thing. They are using violence and killing people just as a plot device, basically. Mm-hmm. It never has any ramifications for the characters, but here here in The Song of Ice and Fire, it does. Arya is profoundly changed by this killing people, which ties in with yet another comment that I found in this 172 comment thread. This one was made by Imsgrammar. I just want to quote the beginning. Arya is still Arya inside. And the argument goes on that she is not exactly a faceless man and that she still retains something of Arya. Mm-hmm. And I would disagree with it because she is not a faceless man, yes, but she is also not Arya, at least not Arya in the sense that we left her when her chapters were still titled Arya. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I think in this here we can see the clearest why Martin chose to change the chapter names, as well as with Sansa. There is the same thing. This profound change in character goes along with the rapid changing names in the chapter names, and wow. So she's not Arya anymore. She's something different.
That's true. I mean, I think I see the point that Imsgram is making in this comment that you point out, and I'm sure we'll post this in the post somewhere. But you know, the point is, if she were truly a loyal faceless man, or apprentice faceless man, faceless boy, she would not be sort of going off on her own and continuing to murder her way through her lists. That's not her assignment, right? Her assignment right now, it just is becoming apparent to me literally as I say this, she's literally apprenticing with this theater company to learn how to act, right? Yeah. Like, that's the idea. She's not there undercover. She's not, you know, she's there to learn how to be a good actor.
Yes.
Because that's a skill that she would need as a faceless man.
Some guys in the comment thread even suggested that this chapter takes place after she decided to split with the Faceless Men and that she is currently preparing to leave Braavos, which is also a possibility here.
Certainly, but I mean, she was assigned to this dude in her last chapter, I believe, in...
I'm not quite sure.
In Winds, I think I read that.
Then forget it.
Yeah, it's on... Nobody suspects the butterfly, a really very fine tumbler. Who does the Song of Ice and Fire analysis, essentially predicted the events of this chapter almost entirely accurately. And yeah, so she, at the end of Arya's chapters, it says, you know, tomorrow you'll begin your apprenticeship with Isambaro or whatever. So this is part of the plan. This is part of the Faceless Man's plan. That doesn't mean that, like, Arya within her own mind has not decided that this life is not for her and she'll stick with it as long as it makes sense, and then we'll leave, you know. But that, I think, is, you know, I think that's the point. You know, she's not the Arya we used to know, for sure. But she still is, but nor is she, I've completely forsaken my old life, my past, my old grudges, my old loves, and I'm now just doing whatever the Faceless Men tell me to. That's obviously not the case either.
That allows me to tie in the last comment I singled out. It was written by Ultima, and he is saying, "This child ain't right. Too much blood is seen by the ghost of the high heart. She may choose not to go back to the kindly man after this personal hit, blah, 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 blah," and so on. He's making this argument, or she, I don't know, is making this argument pretty well. But I guess this prophecy of the high heart, I totally forgot it until I read that comment, you know, blood child, murder child, or how does it go? Something like this. It definitely comes true now here in Braavos. I wouldn't want to be around Arya anymore. She really is fucking dangerous.
Yeah, Arya does at this point seem, and I think this is worth pointing out too, Arya does seem now like someone who would murder you if you got on her nerves. And I'm not saying that to be funny. Like, that's not hyperbole. Like, I actually think that's true. I think she seems to be the kind of person who could develop within her mind a reason why it's perfectly justifiable to murder you for having bothered her. You know, and that's more or less why she kills the deserter from the Night's Watch. I mean, it is a capital crime to desert from the Night's Watch. So it's not purely just like, oh, this person, fuck this guy, I hate him. But that's mostly what it is, you know.
Yes.
It's troubling, and it is an example of that prophecy sort of coming to pass.
Yeah.
Which again is sad, I think. And just to get back to something that you said earlier about how there are many fictional narratives in which retributive or redemptive violence against the bad guys is just par for the course. And obviously that's absolutely correct. And you know, and in those situations, there's no doubt whatsoever that it's the right thing to do to kill certain people. I mean, it's a closed moral calculus, and that's how the variables work out. And you see that from, and you see Martin playing with that from time to time, I think. You know, two examples I bring up all the time and how this is treated differently at different times. One is Jon Snow executing Janos Slynt. Now, I'm not, you know, I'm against capital punishment in the real world, but in Westeros, I was cheering for this. And there was, even in A Song of Ice and Fire, there's very little room for believing that, like, oh, I probably should let him go, you know? Like, that's the right thing to do, right? Now, on the other hand, you have Tyrion killing Shae. And I think within this world, within this fictional world, a lot of people would say, that's justified. He was betrayed unto death by a woman who had sworn to be loyal to him. She broke that promise. This is being very unfair to Shae, but I'm just constructing the argument. So therefore, it's okay to kill her. Lots of people that we've met, not necessarily the real moral paragons, but like a wide range of people, from lunatics to basically decent guys who are just kind of violent, would all agree that that's okay. But we readers don't see it that way. And so I think that's sort of the point we're reaching with Arya, is how do we define these variables in this particular moral equation? Is it okay for her to kill these horrendous, horrendous fucking Lannister goons who are terrible, you know, and who will have killed innocent people and raped innocent people? Raped innocent people? That doesn't make any sense. Have raped people, and you know what I mean. And they will do it again if Arya doesn't kill them. Or are we supposed to think this is not a way of life that is healthy, that is positive, that will lead to anything good for the underlying society?
I mean, Martin is pretty much a revisionist writer in all things fantasy, so being a revisionist about this redemptive killing, about the idea of badassery killing, would just fit into what he has delivered so far. He is definitely not above doing this from time to time. We had very satisfying deaths on screen. I mean, Joffrey, for Christ's sake.
Yes.
I guess no one would argue that this was not exactly the most heinous crime of all time.
No, that's true. Although even with Joffrey, he pushes that death scene far enough that there does come a moment where you're like, oh, Jesus, just let him die already.
You know? Exactly. But it is still a feeling of the fucker's dead, you know?
Sure, sure.
So Martin is not always holding back. That is what numerous people have pointed out. He is not totally subverting the fantasy genre. He's just revisioning it in certain key aspects.
Yes.
And I think he is doing this in the most sensitive and important areas. I mean, think of the issue of misogyny.
Uh-huh.
And now this killing thing. I think this is a very good thing he's doing here, and many writers that aspired to do more or less the same thing as he just totally didn't get the point and are always going for dark and gritty but still making the same fucking mistake.
Yep.
All the same. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But hopefully at least 1 in 10 will follow his course.
Yeah. Oh, no, I like what you said. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and not go down the route that commenter Obi-Wan Kenobi went in saying Arya is by far the coolest of the Starks. She's an Avenger. No, she's not.
Right.
She's really not.
Yeah.
She is on a very dark path that will lead her to a even darker place.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, if you just want to watch people like rampaging around being assholes to each other, murdering people, you know, and that gets passed off as cool, like, you can read a New 52 DC comic for that. Like, it's not, that's not, there's nothing, I mean, this is such an old argument in comics, but you're right, like, revisionism just doesn't mean, like, amping up the sex and violence to 11.
Yes.
You know, it's examining the assumptions of the genre. And yes, one of the assumptions of the genre used to be, like, violence is relatively bloodless and there was no sex. That is a revisionist project. But then you also have to, like, well, violence is relatively bloodless. Why? Well, because violence was presented as, like, fundamentally acceptable. So when you add the blood in, you also have to add in the part where you go like, oh Jesus, the blood, you know,
like, yeah, consequences.
Yes, consequences.
My mantra, basically.
Yes, consequences, like, is what you're adding. Blood is part of the consequences, but it is by no means the only consequence that you need to add in.
Yes.
And yeah, that's dead on, man. That is dead on. It's consequences. It's not violence for violence sake. It's violence as a consequence of, you know, of a violent society. And,
yes.
and how that plays out. Yeah, man. Totally.
I guess that's also where your feeling flat feeling came from, because it is not entirely clear in this chapter. Is it just there for us to cheer the death of Raff the Sweetling, or should it tell us something? It's very ambiguous in that way. It is not like the speech about the broken men, you know? There is no ambiguity in that.
Right.
But here in this chapter, it can go either way.
Yeah, and are we supposed to, you know, I mean, I don't get me wrong, I think we're clearly supposed to be like, wow, that's fucked up, huh? But there's all sorts of fucked up stuff that you can just enjoy in a fairly straightforward fashion. And, you know, is that what's going on here? It's a little bit unclear within its own, you know, just within the context of this single chapter. So that's sort of where it's leaving me flat. Yeah. Yeah.
Then let's go back to the easy stuff. Politics.
Okay. Yes.
Because we have some of that in there as well, because Arya is in this show that is clearly made up for Harry Swift, who is there in his official function as, I think, Master of Coin, to treat with the Iron Bank of Braavos. And I think there are two interesting things in this chapter. The first is the content of this play that is prepared for him. And the second one is that they always refer to him as the envoy of Westeros, which leads me to think that the Iron Bank is keeping its engagement with Stannis under wraps.
Yeah.
Because the envoy of Westeros basically doesn't acknowledge that there is a pretender that the Iron Bank is supporting, you know? I got the feeling that not many people know this by now.
Well, yeah, I mean, they'd have to keep it a secret, you know, because they would just have to keep it a secret, you know? I think at the point where if King's Landing finds out, like, King's Landing can still make trouble for Braavos, and what I'm curious as to, just thinking about it now, is that, is there a particular agenda here for the Faceless Men in allowing, like, would the Faceless Men intervene at any point if they found out that, like, this important Westerosi envoy was going to this theater where their little crazy apprentice is training? You know, like, what's the political scene behind the scenes that enables the Braavosi system to function? Like, is there a connection between the Faceless Men and the Sea Lord and the Iron Bank? And
to be honest, I think we could debate this a whole day.
Yes.
And not get any closer to the truth, because there is just too little information on it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know anything about the Faceless Men. There is a ton of fan theories out there, what their goal is, what their end game is, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the truth is, we simply don't know anything. It is can't be decided right now. So I simply don't know. We have to wait.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. And I, you know, of course, I wonder what kind of trouble this will make. I wonder. Yeah, we just there's so much we don't know. You know, it's the Sea Lord and the Iron Bank in cahoots. Like that seems to be really important. If this guy's there to I just, you know, yeah, it seems very key. There's a lot of information we're not sure about, but it seems like Braavos is going to play a bigger and bigger role, right?
Yeah, the world is broadening in every aspect.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else there is to say about this.
Yeah, just think about the image of Tyrion, because this play sets him up to rape Mercy and then kill her, and her lines were to be something. I just have to search it out what her lines were, because they were very telling about, you know what, what do I want to say? Very telling about the image that Tyrion is getting. It is, "Please, my lord, I'm still a maiden." That's her line. Mm-hmm. And Tyrion has this absurdly big cock that this dwarf is getting four times the normal size.
Yeah.
And he is obviously portrayed as the lusty dwarf. So all these. I don't even know the word. Superstitions is not exactly it. You know, images mm-hmm. about someone. Like all blacks are lazy. What's the word of it for it?
Stereotype.
Yeah, thanks. All of them are just still hurled on Tyrion, and the Braavosi are politically savvy enough to exploit them and to fan them up at Sir Harry Swift, because it is what he will like. They are playing politics even in those settings, which mm-hmm. just adds to this feeling of a very real world, which is why I like this world building. It just feels real.
Yeah, for sure. I also like that the play was written, wasn't it, by Fario Farrell?
Right.
It's got to be Sirio's brother, right? Or uncle, or dad, or son, or something.
Distant cousin, something.
I mean, I guess
it is just a gimmick, an Easter egg here for those still remembering who he is.
Well, cute, man. Go for it. By all means, put some Easter eggs in. Entertain me.
I don't think it has any actual significance.
No. Jesus, no. God forbid. he's still alive. He's out there. I've never understood how that would make the slightest bit of sense.
It is just not understanding narrative.
Right. Yeah. So what's going on in this? What else is going on in this world of Braavos and with these?
In theory, we should meet how is it called? Justin Massey soon, because he was sent by Stannis to secure the loans and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So he should arrive pretty soon, I guess. And I would stake some money on that his and Sir Harris's paths will cross at some point.
Yeah, that seems likely.
No sense in setting up all this stuff if it was any other way.
Uh-huh. But it'll take him a while to get there, surely, right? I mean, I guess we don't know where in the story this chapter is located, but, I mean, right now he's snowbound in the middle of the north. So he has to get all the way to the coast and fucking get to Braavos, which is gonna
But Martin isn't the most detailed guy on traveling
distances. True, the incredible the envoy from the Iron Bank is like the Flash.
Yeah,
you know, just jet setting around up there. I guess maybe the idea is that it's easier with a small party. I don't know. It still took fucking Hodor long enough to get anybody any place, so I don't know.
Yeah,
and, you know, I'm trying to think. Have we exhausted now? The
I guess so. Yes.
It's funny. I think I like, you know, the point I guess that I would make here towards the end is the elements, the things that we learn about Braavos, the things, the little glimpses that we see of the political situation with the master of coin coming to visit. The implications it has for the future with regards to Justin Massey's visit. The stuff with Stannis. Fario Farrell. The whole fact that there's this like sort of Shakespearean Elizabethan theater tradition in this country. The meta element of the, you know, like the Hamlet style play about the actual events that took place. You know, Martin just having the opportunity to riff on like bits of Richard III and stuff. Like that's all to me more fun to read than Arya sex murdering somebody.
Yeah, me too.
And I think is, you know, it's kind of the same when you think about it as the Tyrion chapter and the stuff that I liked there. So there you have it. That's my take on it, I guess.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add myself, neither.
All right. Well, maybe we'll be back next week. Who knows?
Yeah, wishful thinking.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening and going through this step-by-step journey with us. And I guess we'll see you next time.
Yeah, at least I hope so very much.
Chapter or not. All right, take care. And Stefan, thanks as always.
Yeah, thank you.
Later, man.
Later.